afternoon. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit today about our experience at Metropolitan during Superstorm Sandy and the months that followed. I want to take a moment to acknowledge Marcy Rubin. She was very influential in writing the abstract and making the presentation. She couldn't make it this year, but she was the one who first got me to come to APHA, so I owe her a great debt of gratitude. I have no financial relationships to close. Okay, so out of curiosity, by a show of hands, how many people were at the annual meeting last year? One, two, three. Okay, anybody from the East Coast? Do you have trouble getting back? Yeah, so if you're like me, you were, the weather was great last year in San Francisco, and all of us were probably glued to the television watching what was unfolding over here on the East Coast. You know, we all sort of knew it was coming between October 22nd and October 29th. There were a lot of preparations done. I'm going to talk about those a little bit, but I think most of the stories that we know happened around between the 29th and the 1st of November. But what I'm really going to, I'm going to try to focus for the most part on Metropolitan's role as one of New York City's hospitals that didn't shut down, and really what followed for the next few months, which was, we all sort of expected it to be a few weeks, but it turned into a few months of recovery. So on October 22nd, this tropical storm, Sandy, it started as a tropical, Sandy apparently had a lot of different names, so I'm probably going to lose track of them, but it started as a tropical wave, turned into a tropical storm on October 22nd, and then it gained hurricane status 2 days later, and it brushed past Jamaica, made landfall as a Category 3 storm in Cuba the next day, and then over the next few days, it strengthened and weakened, and it hit New Jersey on October 29th. It hit Atlantic City. Already up and down the course that it traveled, it caused a lot of flooding, but really it was over the next 2 days in New Jersey and New York that most of the damage happened. Despite this preparation, flights were canceled, states of emergency were declared in both New York and New Jersey, all bridges and tunnels were closed. Schools, the entire city was basically shut down over these few days. Mass transportation was canceled. And then evacuations, I think on the night of the 29th, evacuations at some of these hospitals were ordered. And in several hospitals, not just these three, but in several hospitals in both New York and New Jersey, they had to evacuate their entire facilities. However, in downtown Manhattan, the East River flooded, and three major hospital centers had to close. NYU Langone Medical Center, the Manhattan VA Hospital, and Bellevue Hospital. And this included their entire, I'm sure that we've all seen this, if you go to the New England Journal of Medicine, there's really, really great articles about this. But I don't work at Bellevue, so I'm actually going to spend a little more time talking about the days that followed. So when all was said and done, the damage was over $68 million. This was the second worst hurricane in the nation's history, which followed by Hurricane Katrina. Estimated to have resulted in 286 deaths in seven countries. There was massive flooding all over the tri-state area. It took weeks, even months, to clean up. A lot of sewage spillage. Transportation was really limited for several months afterwards. There were power outages that also lasted a few weeks in downtown Manhattan and New Jersey. And hundreds of thousands of homes in Queens, Long Island, and New Jersey were destroyed. So the recovery period, personally, I would say it was about 3 months. I think I have a little longer here because Metropolitan Hospital's doors remained open to Bellevue's patients for at least that amount of time, if not longer. And I think that, again, a lot of the stories that you hear about Superstorm Sandy have to do with what was this sort of dealing with the acute problems on the day of the storm. But we can't forget that, you know, a lot of the care that's delivered these days happens in an outpatient setting. It happens over a long period of time. So there are patients who were still expecting to have services rendered even weeks and months later, and they couldn't because their facilities remained closed for at least a few months. So New York, you know, a lot of the New York City hospitals that remained open had to absorb the patient flow from these other facilities. You know, there were procedures that had been scheduled and canceled. They had to be rescheduled at the new facilities. You know, prescriptions had to be rewritten and dispensed at the new facilities. Primary care and other outpatient services still had to be done. And you know, again, I don't think anybody really expected it to take this long for Bellevue and NYU to reopen. So you know, the first few days were characterized by, you know, hundreds of additional patients. For practices that normally serve about 100, 150 patients a day, we were up to, you know, 350 patients a day. And we didn't really expect this to last so long, but it ended, you know, I think that level of activity went on for a few weeks. So this is a graphic that was released by the Health and Hospitals Corporation, which is the corporation Metropolitan is a part of. And these are kind of all interesting statistics. There were 9 hospitals in full operation throughout the storm. All of the nursing homes, 4 nursing homes stayed in operation. There were 7,000 patients in HHC hospitals during the storm. There were 3 HHC mobile medical vans serving hard hit communities. 900 patients were safely evacuated. I think that was primarily from Bellevue. The other hospital that had extensive damage was Coney Island. But I think most of these patients, the 900, were from Bellevue. There were 8 special needs shelters staffed by HHC clinicians, 2 data centers opened, and $300 million of emergency repair funds by the mayor's office. Okay, so before I tell you the specific stories, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Metropolitan Hospital Center in general. We are an acute care hospital on Manhattan's Upper East Side, sort of where the Upper East Side hits Harlem. We are a subsidiary of the Health and Hospitals Corporation of New York City, which is the municipal healthcare system there. We are part of a network with 3 other Manhattan-based hospitals, including Bellevue. We're a teaching hospital affiliated with New York Medical College. We serve a diverse, socioeconomically disadvantaged population. A lot of our patients are uninsured, and many of them are also undocumented immigrants. We have a very large outpatient practice with nearly 60,000 unique patients every year. So Metropolitan, you know, saw the writing on the wall, so to speak. We, you know, before the storm even hit, we sort of got ourselves ready. We stocked up and we opened up an emergency satellite clinic. And then, you know, when the time came and we knew that Bellevue was going to close, we immediately started, you know, bringing their staff on board, because we knew that they were going to basically have to report to our facility. Their patients were going to come there, and you know, as much as we could get done beforehand, we did. You know, these what we thought would be temporary became quasi-permanent. It lasted for about 3 months. So you know, you had to get patients into their procedures. A lot of them had to be cleared medically and cleared financially. So then it's you're taking patients who had never been to the facility before and kind of fast-tracking them through the process of getting medical and financial clearance, just so they could then have their procedure performed. A lot of the physicians were able to get on board really quickly, and so, you know, if a patient had a procedure scheduled with a particular physician, in most cases they were able to get it done by the same physician. But naturally, there were delays created because of this. You know, from our perspective, the outpatient practice really had to handle medication maintenance. You know, patients who were on medication and they had to continue, they had to get refills, they had to get medication dispensed, and so they had to sort of again go through a process that normally, you know, works very fluidly when you have a patient coming into a clinic on a regular basis. But now you're sort of, you know, you're fast tracking all this stuff. And a lot of efforts were made to preserve continuity of care. even though it was sort of we had to balance between serving the patients who show up that day had to be served. So we had both Bellevue and Metropolitan Hospitals just seeing patients who showed up, and not to mention patients who were coming on a regular basis who were who had scheduled appointments who came to see their doctor in a completely new place. Every department in the hospital played an important role. This really only scratches the surface. I mean, my department, we're the ones who handled most of the, the outpatients who came in, who managed the satellite facility that we opened. But human resources, every day I walked past it and there was a line of about 100 people. We had to fast track, getting, normally these sort of things would take months to bring, physicians and staff on board. We kind of just had to do it that day. Or in the days that followed, a lot of physician overtime was given, and then of course IT. And I really wish I could speak a little more about IT, but I don't work for that department. But needless to say, a lot was done right by IT. In getting the medical records from Bellevue onto laptops in our facility. These sorts of things would normally take months. I read a quote by the executive director saying that we had long tried to get this sort of integration of medical records between Bellevue and Metropolitan, and now it was done because of the storm in a matter of days. So here are a few photos. The one in the upper left-hand corner is from the emergency room. The one to the right of that is in the pharmacy, and the one below that is in the satellite clinic, which was just a temporary space that we opened up to accommodate, walk-in patients. And if I had to guess, I'd say these photos were taken over the course of the entire 3 months, because, when you're in situations like this, you find yourself, working with people who you never worked with before, but you see around, but everybody sort of goes wherever they're needed. The doctor in the upper right-hand corner, or I'm sorry, the pharmacist in the upper right-hand corner is I don't recognize him, so I'm fairly certain he's a Bellevue pharmacist. But it was really, getting the two massive teams together, working very fluid. In a much smaller space, by the way. Metropolitan is not a very large hospital. But it was really kind of remarkable to watch all of this. So we continued seeing patients up until January of 2013, so it was about 2 or 3 months. And there were over 5,000 outpatient visits from non-metropolitan patients. Over 1,000 of these were for primary care services. There were 124 Bellevue physicians I think they were credentialed, and whatever had to be done, they were incorporated into our roles. We had to, see patients in the emergency room, see patients in this annex of the ER, which is sort of like what I've been referring to as the satellite facility. The urgent care center became an outpatient, just a normal outpatient practice to see patients with scheduled appointments. And then within the normal facility, all of our outpatient units and inpatient units had to, incorporate more than twice as many patients. If you could even call this a silver lining, it is worth mentioning that our hospital netted over $250,000 because of this. And I'm not sure if this is true, but I heard that this was the first year we were, in the black. So I was going to say that I present about much more sort of feel-good topics about, patient-centered medical homes and primary care teams. But I've always enjoyed, even in those presentations, talking about what the challenges are, because I think that's kind of why we're all here, is to identify challenges and solve them. So this one, it was great, the entire presentation is about a challenge. There were a lot of preparations done, but it really wasn't enough. And I think that, as municipalities, we need to sort of get past I think I can remember situations where things were over-prepared for, but I don't think you can over-prepare for something like this. And I think as time goes on and these events become more common and worse, perhaps, there's really no level of preparation that should go undone. I bet you my fellow presenters can talk a little more about this than I can, but sitting water, there's a high risk with that. damages to homes and business and loss of power. There's a lot of a huge public health concern with all of these things. You know, from a hospital perspective, from an outpatient perspective, continuity of care is extremely important. You know, for patients who are seeing the same doctor day in, day out, or on a weekly or monthly basis, it's important to at least try to get them to see that doctor even when you're in a crisis. You know, a lot of the work we do is about working to improve processes moving forward, but here it's sort of you're in the moment and you have to just figure out the best way to do things with little to no time on your hands. You want to do as much as you can before. I think we did a lot beforehand, but again, it's never quite enough. You know, we should have had these IT systems up from the very beginning, and so that we weren't, you know, sort of moving, bouncing between computers just to, you know, look at the right medical records. People always want to know, as something like this is happening, well, how many patients do we see? You know, even more than on a daily basis, when you still want to know, you know, how many patients are coming at us. Times like these, you really want to keep a very careful eye on it to know if the volume of patients are increasing or decreasing, because you're in crisis mode. So it's all the more important to know, you know, what your demand is. But again, we didn't have that in place right away, so we sort of had to develop it as we went along. Don't forget about staff getting to the facility. Transportation was all shut down. And finally, try to predict what patients are going to need. There are oxygen machines that weren't working. They needed to get those replaced. There were ventilators. There were medication refills. Procedures had to be rescheduled. There was ongoing chronic treatment. And one of the most interesting things that I didn't see this coming, although I should have, is Bellevue has a very high population who speaks Mandarin, and we serve a population that speaks Spanish. So we had a lot more translation needs a little foresight would have helped. And this was a mistake. This was actually, I think I already said some of these things, but maybe I inadvertently wanted to say them again. But I think the only thing that was on this slide, so I was speaking about the Bellevue serving large populations who speak Chinese. And in general, foresee the needs of health systems by improving infrastructure, preparing for the worst, and learning from past disasters, including this one. Thank you.